A man in Atlanta, Georgia, sells a new product in his drugstore. It's a medicine he's developed to fight fatigue, headaches, and depression. He calls it Coca-Cola. A man from Iserlohn in Germany invents the ring binder and the hole punch. A man in Mannheim starts a four-stroke internal combustion engine built into a three-wheeler with a clutch, a carburetor, a gear shift, and electric ignition. He'd worked for 3 long years on this patent motor wagon. Now he's driving it around the streets of his hometown. Passers-by have never seen such a self-propelled vehicle before. Near Stuttgart, two men roll an American model stagecoach out of a garden shed and start the four-stroke internal combustion engine they've installed. There's no need for a horse. Instead, they drive through the streets of Cannstatt with a 1.5 horsepower supplied by their engine. The year is 1886.
The echoes of the world, unchanged for thousands of years, are starting to acquire a new sound. It is the dawn of the machine age. People are beginning to use electricity and high-speed internal combustion engines in ways that will change their lives forever. In the same year in which the automobile was invented, Robert Bosch decided to participate in this new age in his own special way.
In November 1886, I opened a workshop for precision mechanics in Stuttgart with the aim of building machines, preferably electric ones. I also installed home telegraphs.
Robert Bosch. Telephones, home telegraphs. Professional testing and installation of lightning rods. Installation and repairs of electrical devices and all precision engineering work.
Read the advertisement he placed in a Stuttgart daily paper during his first year to attract attention to his small company. It wasn't easy at first. Soon he was accepting any kind of job, even if it was unrelated to his business.
Bosch built and repaired electric stenograph machines, typewriters, speedometers, fountain pens, caliper compasses, telephone terminals and cables, line switches for telephones, electric bells, door contacts and push buttons, resistance bridges, taps for water pipes that emptied automatically once the pressure was removed, gas lighters, shooting targets with electrical displays, and much more.
As unlikely as this hodgepodge of machines and services may seem at first glance, almost all of them had one thing in common. In one way or another, they were all electric, and electricity was the energy powering the new age. Hardly a day went by without some clever minds in Europe or America inventing new gadgets for all things imaginable. The sky, it seemed, was the limit.
But nothing was standardized. Industrial norms didn't yet exist. If you needed an electrical machine, you went to someone who knew what he was doing and had him build one, or invent one if need be.
In the summer, a mechanical engineer with a small-scale operation came to me and asked whether I could build him a machine, like the one the Deutz factory used for their internal combustion engines, which he said I could see in Schorndorf. I went there and found a low-voltage magneto-ignition device with touch spark ignition. To be on the safe side, I inquired at Deutz as to whether any part of the device was protected by patent. I got no answer to my query, nor did I find any other sign that the device was patented, so I went ahead and built one.
As he was working, he realized he could improve on the device, which he then proceeded to do. The customer was satisfied and ordered a second one.
The magneto-ignition device soon attracted other customers and before long became the first promising mainstay of the workshop. But this didn't mean Bosch was already out of the woods.
For a long time, the business was a shambles.
Having used up the 10,000 marks capital his father had left him on his death 6 years before, the young businessman needed fresh funds. He borrowed from his family and, sometimes spontaneously, from a neighbouring fruit seller as well, so that he could pay his associates their wages on time. His creditors came to know Robert Bosch as a man it was safe to lend money to, a man they could depend on to pay his debts.
He made his way to his customers on a bicycle, a vehicle widely considered dangerous. People who went in for such bone-rattling transportation were considered reckless daredevils. For others, riding a velocipede was an expression of a modern attitude which deserved a certain amount of respect.
Astride the said bicycle sat a man with an impressively bushy beard and unconventional attire. His trousers, shirt and jacket were made of wool and tailored to the specifications of a doctor and enthusiastic developer of the type of health-promoting garments advocated by the lifestyle reform movement. The outfit was topped off by a dark, wide-brimmed hat.
In view of his appearance in the streets of Stuttgart, he could easily have been taken for a preacher rather than an emissary of the approaching age of electricity. But he seemed to understand his business. His order books filled up and his finances stabilised. And so he felt the time had come to start a family. In 1887 he asked his fiancée to marry him, and she accepted. 1 year later a daughter was born, the following year a second, and in 1891 a son. 2 years after that, the couple had a third daughter, who died at the age of one.
By now, Bosch's increasingly successful workshop had more work than it could handle. His two associates, a technician and an errand boy, soon found themselves unable to cope with the volume of work. Electrical engineers, however, were in short supply. The field was simply too new to have produced many skilled specialists. They were hard to come by, and identifying them required not only professional expertise, but also a keen insight into human nature. It took Bosch a fair time to find workers who met his consistently high standards in terms of quality and work ethics. But the choices he made were in some cases so good that those associates remained with him their entire lives and went on to enjoy impressive careers.
The way he treated his associates and the consistently high quality of the products soon rendered results. The Bosch workshop gained a superb reputation. By 1895, 9 years after the company was founded, all the loans had been repaid.
Two years later, the English automobile pioneer Frederick Sims sent Bosch a motorized three-wheeler made by the French company de Dion-Bouton, asking him to replace its highly unreliable buzzer ignition system with one of his magneto-ignition devices. Sims claimed that the engine achieved 600 revolutions per minute.
The apprentice Max Rall, who many years later would become a member of the Board of Management, was the only one brave enough to attempt a test drive on the unusually speedy vehicle. It turned out that the engine ran much faster than Sims had said. They recorded 1,800 revolutions per minute. That was impressive. And it was also a problem.
The Bosch low-voltage magneto, they feared, would not be able to keep up with such engine speeds. So far, it had only been used in stationary internal combustion engines with no more than 180 revolutions per minute. But Robert Bosch and his factory manager hadn't run out of ideas yet, not by a long shot. They knew they had found the main problem with all internal combustion engines, namely the reliability of the ignition. Pioneers like Nikolaus Otto, Carl Benz, Gottlieb Daimler, Wilhelm Maybach and others who were designing and building engines had all reached the same conclusion. They all knew that the key element determining how fast an engine can run is the ignition system, and the faster an engine runs, the more powerful it is.
But 1,000 revolutions, or even more, was a speed no ignition system available anywhere could keep pace with. Still, there just had to be a way. Bosch's factory manager, Arnold Zeringer, spent quite a while contemplating the problem, experimenting and testing. And finally, he came up with a stroke of genius.
Instead of moving the ponderous armature itself through the magnetic field, he left this job to a lightweight metal sleeve, which he put around the armature. This enabled the magneto to work reliably at high speeds. An astonishingly simple solution.
And an astoundingly momentous one too, as events would soon show. What worked so well for the engine in the Didion Bouton three-wheeler? With the new magneto ignition device, it ran more smoothly, more safely and more reliably, was true for all internal combustion engines across the globe. High engine speeds were suddenly no longer a problem.
Frederick Sims, who had sent Bosch the three-wheeler, instantly recognised the potential of the new ignition device and offered to act as exclusive agent for England and France. Sims had close ties with the Daimler Motor Company, which Bosch saw as an opportunity to access a new target group, automobile manufacturers.
He would be swamped by the demand for his ignition device, he hoped. But that wasn't quite the way it happened, not at first. Gottlieb Daimler was not keen on electric ignition. He'd developed his own patent for his engines, in which a tube, closed at one end, was heated with a flame. This constantly red-hot tube ignited the air-fuel mixture when it was drawn into the cylinder, and that was the way he intended it to stay.
Daimler's response was, "It must be a poor inventor or engineer who would bind himself to such a revolution overnight."
And so the deal fell through. But even if this big car maker wasn't interested, car owners were. A wave of private orders came in for all kinds of models and engines that were starting to populate the streets. Since there were as yet no standard sizes, each engine required its own special solution to connect it to the new ignition device. This was the challenge confronting Bosch's associates, and the experience gained in meeting it was invaluable.
A long while and many satisfied car owners later, Bosch's relationship with Daimler took a new turn when Emil Jelinek, an automobile enthusiast, came on the scene. He was considered an expert.
It was Jelinek who paved the way for the rise of the Robert Bosch workshop by stipulating that all vehicles he ordered from Daimler for sale in Austria had to be fitted with Bosch ignition systems. Several years later, the general consul from Vienna would name a Daimler racing car after his daughter Mercedes. Soon after, as Bosch's business also took off in England and France, the small company, established just 14 years before, was growing into a promising business which would soon employ over 40 people. The time had come to reorganise a number of things.
The plan was to further expand the company, continue to push business abroad, build a Bosch factory, and all the while there was a gnawing doubt in the back of Robert Bosch's mind. Is specialization the right course? Or would the magneto-ignition device turn out to be a flash in the pan?